It seems a pity to spoil the richness of the silence with words. Closer? Okay. I'm always reminded of that line from Job, canst thou thunder with a voice like God? I think I'm going to skip a lot of the stuff I was planning on talking about the relationship of murderers to their victims, and instead move to a discussion of Jung's approach to evil and the issue of the dark side of the self. Okay. I'm getting anxious that I'm making everybody depressed. I do have a supply of jokes that I could do. I could tell you. Lorraine also mentioned that I perhaps should mention the autobiographical origins of my interest in this topic, which is very simply that my father was a concentration camp survivor. He was in Buchenwald in the Second World War. And so when I was growing up, I had the oppression that he lived with hung like a kind of black cloud over the house. And the house was full of people who'd been in similar situations. So I grew up with that kind of rather morbid atmosphere. So, you know, one trains to be a therapist early on. and so this is the problem of the evil and so on has been on my mind for really as long as I can remember. So to move to Jung, he thinks that you cannot have good without evil. You could not have evil without good. They are a pair of epistemological opposites. They sort of imply each other. He acknowledges that our judgment of good and evil is always a subjective judgment, and we don't know what their essential natures are. We make a certain judgment, but we don't know whether good and evil have some essence of their own. We never know whether our opinion is valid, and we never know whether something evil will produce good. The example that he gives is the Christian notion of the felix culpa, the happy sin, the sin of Adam, which eventually led to the appearance of Jesus Christ. So his idea was that sometimes something that looks bad on the surface can lead to long-term good consequences. So we have to take into account paradoxes. We have to use an empirical attitude to good and evil in any individual case, hoping that we're right when we make a judgment, but recognizing that we might be wrong. He says, often we cannot say, this is a quote from Jung, we cannot say in some situations how the problem of good and evil will work out. We have to put our trust in the higher powers. Sometimes we need to struggle with evil for the development of the personality. Some Jungians believe there can be no self-realization without the experience of evil, and that recognizing the reality of evil is essential for establishing a relationship with the self. Here, we mean the transpersonal self, or the image of God in the psyche. So the reason is that facing evil can open us to spiritual renewal or to higher levels of meaning. So and the Red Book has many instances like this, where Jung is in the Red Book. I don't know if anybody, actually the Red Book is nowadays the unread book, because very few people are actually reading it. But there's a great deal of pointing out in the Red Book that somehow evil is absolutely essential for spiritual development. Because when we see instances of evil, it connects us with our own shadow. The shadow is that part of you which you wish were not so, those aspects of the personality that you would like to repudiate. It might be envy, rage, hate, any kind of quality like that, that you wish you were not like that. But that confrontation with the shadow is essential for psychological transformation. When you approach it, it opens you up to necessary change. Now, Jung was very critical of a Christian doctrine. I don't have anything to write on here, but there's a Christian doctrine that goes back to Plato and was mostly promulgated by St. Augustine, called the privatio boni. I'll spell that for you, since I can't write it. It's P-R-I-V-A-T-I-O, privatio. Boni is B-O-N-I. It just means the privation of good. And it's the notion that evil is the absence of good. Evil only has relative existence. Good is something positive, but evil is an absence. So evil in this view would be something like a hole in a shirt. It's something that you don't necessarily want, but there's nothing positive there. There's something missing. Okay. Now, Jung was vehemently opposed to this idea because he thought that it implies that evil is somehow not substantial. If you say it's only an absence, it's not substantial. And he said, if evil is not substantial, then how can good be substantial? And if good is substantial, then evil must be substantial. That good and evil really imply each other. And he said this privatio doctrine gives a very pessimistic view of the human soul because it means that God is not responsible for evil. It's all up to human beings. And he thinks that Christianity is thereby minimizing the importance of evil by exclusively blaming humanity for evil, rather than acknowledging his idea that the divine has a dark side to it. In many mythologies, there are light gods and dark gods. Loki and Baldur in Norse mythology, Set and Osiris in Egyptian mythology, Ahriman and Ahura Mazda in Zoroastrian mythology. It's a very common motif to say that the archetype has a light side and a dark side. But he felt that in Christianity, somehow evil is split off. Christ is only good and God is only good. I think it's the first letter of John. It says, he is only light and in him there is no darkness. I may not have that exactly right. Something like that. So he thinks that cannot possibly be true. What you then have to do is you have to split off evil and project it onto the Antichrist or onto the devil. And he thinks that this is an attempt to deny the fact that there could be some other equal power to the goodness of God in the universe. But he thinks that if you want to have a really monotheistic God image, then you have to contain all the opposites in your God image. You can't have a God image that splits off evil. It has to have a dark side as well as a light side. It has to have a feminine aspect as well. That was another critique of Christianity, that its God image was too male. So he wants to include the feminine aspects of the divine. He wants to include the dark side of the divine. And he thinks that's why he thinks that the God image that you have has to contain all the opposites. What if he's right about that, that would mean that there would be a level of evil that was not human. But he points out that if the doctrine of privatio boni is correct, if evil is just an absence, then the devil can't be substantial either. Christianity wants to have a devil and the doctrine of privatio boni. So he thinks that's an inconsistency. Now, in the human being, we call evil the shadow. He calls evil the shadow. The shadow can refer to the dark side or the evil side of the personality, or it can refer to positive aspects of the personality that are not claimed. That's why the Jungians say there's gold in the shadow. You might have some talent or ability that you've never developed that could be. Maybe you're a poet or a musician or something that you just didn't realize that you had in you. That would be the positive aspect of the shadow. Okay, so the shadow is not necessarily entirely evil, but I'm really going to focus mostly on the dark side of the shadow, which opens us up to becoming an instrument of evil. And he does agree that human nature is capable of an infinite amount of evil. You can't drive away evil. Remember in the Hebrew Bible, the mythologem of the scapegoat? I forget which book it's in. Maybe it's Leviticus, where they load the sins of the people onto a goat and cast it out into the wilderness. Well, that's fine as a mythologem. The problem is you haven't dealt with it. You've just evacuated it. So he doesn't want us to do that. He wants us to come to terms with the shadow. He wants us to become conscious of it. There are a variety of strategies for dealing with it. You can go along with collective morality. You can just try and repress the dark side of your nature. Okay. You can use willpower. He thought that the more you use willpower and just repress the shadow, the more it builds up in the unconscious, and then it's likely to erupt in unexpected ways, just bursting through the repression barrier. So he thinks it's preferable to acknowledge it, to accept it, before you can try to change it. That takes a lot of courage. It's not easy. Sometimes you have to look at the way you've behaved and try and make amends and apologize and grieve. But self-knowledge is essential. You have to know what crimes you are capable of.